Numbers Game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Football season's here, and we've got our NFL betting guide. Our NFL betting guide is going to help you get ahead of the upcoming NFL season. It's got in-depth profiles of every team, including advanced stats, proven betting systems, and proprietary betting trends. That means you're only going to get them here. I figured that out. I figured out what the word proprietary means. Become a VSiN Pro subscriber today for as low as $19. Get your digital copy of the VSiN NFL betting guide or take advantage of our summer kickoff special. Get access to everything we do through the Super Bowl for only $175. Sign up today at VSiN.com/subscribe. And I always stress, through the Super Bowl. That means the college football guide, which is coming. That means the NBA guide, which I did write the first word. Remember, this is a good reference. You ever watch SpongeBob, when he's got to write the essay, and he's like working, and then it shows his paper, and he's just written the word the in like really ornate old English. It's exactly what I've done with the NBA betting. We're already getting started.
There you go. I did like your reaction, though, after we got win totals out the other day, where it's just like, I might as well start writing this
right
thing.
That's right. It's never too early. NBA never rests. With that, let's welcome in Drew Dinsick. Nice enough to give us some time. For NBC Sports, but you knew that already, at @whale_capper. Drew, it's good to talk to you. Important conversations only, first of which is I assumed that you're a very healthy guy. A lot of greens, a lot of proteins, taking care of yourself. Two-part question. First off, bananas, how do you like them? Second, how do you open them?
Well, I usually eat my bananas raw. Okay. I don't prepare them, if that was the...
I just meant, like, do you like it a little green? Do you like it a little with the black spots?
No. Give me a fully ripe banana. Like, okay. The green ones is... That's a waste of everyone's time. I like the fully ripe bananas. Too ripe and, you know, I'm out. But so I guess, yeah, for perfect banana for me is probably fully ripe yellow. If it's got a couple of black polka dots on there, no big deal.
All right, like it. And do you open it normally? Because that was the other thing. Oh. There's some psychopaths here. They open it at the bottom.
That's I would report them to the FBI today.
See, there we go. See, Adam Candy's a psycho. That's a good thing to know. Smart people know these things. All right, so let's talk a little bit about what we've seen. Summer league-wise, we don't have to break down the games, but one of the things that really stuck out, you know, a lot of people like to react, and the rookie of the year markets are really what move coming out of summer league contests. A guy like Victor Wembanyama, who was as high as minus $3, down to minus -130. I think that's more about some of these other rookies coming up to him as opposed to Wembanyama coming back down. I also think it's somewhat foolish, even with a guy like Wembanyama, to make him an odds-on favorite this far out. One of the bets that I made, there was an off-market number at 101 on Cam Whitmore. The guy's been awesome. He had 26 and 8 steals yesterday. He's looked like the best player on the floor. I'll just ask you this general question. If you look at anything coming out of summer league, is that what you're kind of doing with some of these markets? It's just, I want to grab some off numbers on some guys who perform pretty well, and especially when the vast majority of the market's at 20-1 and there's like one or two shops at 100-1, that's worth going and taking a flyer on at this point of the season.
Yeah, that's not a crazy strategy. I mean, I get my read on the Wemby drift is much more about availability,
yeah,
question marks, than it is his ability to produce at the NBA level. I think rightful expectation right now, if you're expecting Wemby to play 65 games, I think that's the bull case. He's probably going to get the kid gloves treatment here by the Spurs because they're looking at this as a 5-year arc type of deal to ramp him up to kind of being his, you know, most productive self. And that makes sense. They're, you know, they don't have a team that really looks realistically like they're going to compete this year. So, why put miles on, your most important piece if it's not going to ultimately, if it's not going to ultimately get you where you want as a franchise. So I think that's mostly what you're seeing with that drift, even more so than the other players looking good. Cause what I've seen in summer league is a lot of guys who are going to have some highs and some lows this year.
Yep.
This class has lots of work to do to really make meaningful impact at the NBA level. I don't see a Paolo in this class. You know, sure. I don't see a guy that's just going to come in and be able to soak up usage and put up statistics right out of the gate. And I get your point on taking a shot like 100-1 on Cam Whitmore. Obviously that was a good bet. It's come in quite a lot. But I still look at the Rockets as a team that I don't really understand. He may have a pretty important role for them off the bench, but they're out there signing bets on top of trying to develop young guys in a way that doesn't really gel perfectly. So they might be a hot mess. Yeah. Henderson, I get coming into because he's going to, like, you know, once Dame's out of the way, his usage is obviously right there. But if I'm only allowed to have one bet in this market right now, I'll take some Brandon Miller at 12-1 just because I think if you're going to pick one guy out of this group who's going to get usage and is going to have a consistent impact on the score sheet, it's probably Brandon Miller, just because of his role in that offense and just, you know, their desperate need for that type of player, plug and play type of deal. You're not going to necessarily see on the stat sheet some of the defensive issues with him in that system, but he's going to show up offensively to the tune of, people are going to pay attention to him. So I could see him flipping Scoot in sort of the third favorite spot. And I could also see Chet Holmgren drifting. I mean, there is a lot of mouths to feed in Oklahoma City. His biggest impact for them likely going to be probably on the defensive side, yep. Maybe. It's tough for me to say that, that Holmgren is going to be able to put up any kind of statistical anomalies that are going to warrant rookie of the year consideration. So by the time we get to, say, Christmas break, I could see Miller being second favorite in this market.
All right, before we get to the Wimbledon matchup between the women, really quickly, want to gauge your thoughts on this. Let's say that it happens and that Damian Lillard is flipped to the Miami Heat. Part of the package is Tyler Hero, probably Duncan Robinson, a match from salaries, and those three first-round picks. The Miami Heat is constructed with their three being Jimmy Butler, Damian Lillard, Bam Adebayo, and the rest of the pieces, which is not really great. Am I wrong in thinking the market's a little too high on what that team's going to be, especially in the regular season?
You're not at all. I don't really love the composition, honestly. It's really strange because I feel like the obvious move for Lillard was to try to force his way onto the Celtics for Jaylen Brown swap. That improves the Celtics dramatically. It improves, his chances of a title dramatically. A lot of redundancy with sort of what end of game state looks like for the Heat with Dame Lillard on the floor, and doesn't exactly fit with sort of the overall Spoelstra system, as far as I can tell you. Now, maybe I'm being ridiculous because Dame Lillard is he's a 99th percentile offensive piece. And you put that on a team that otherwise has a bunch of grinders, then, now you're talking about a really competitive team. And the East looks pretty weak outside of the Celtics to me. So it's probably, overthinking it to say that the Lillard Heat experience could result in a lesser outcome than last year's finals appearance, but it doesn't really inspire me to go run at Heat, that's for sure.
All right, let's transition over to Wimbledon right now. Novak Djokovic right now a -2500 favorite, has taken the first two sets here against Sinner in this first semifinals. Let's go to the other, Alcaraz and Medvedev. Alcaraz right now -235 to +195 coming back on Medvedev. This is just, of course, over at DraftKings, different numbers around the market. What's the breakdown here? Is there anything to play either on the match overall or anything in terms of game spread, total games, anything like that?
Yeah, current number is fair here, so there's not really any reason to run and bet this. I lean Alcaraz, and I'm going to look for live opportunities to get involved if Medvedev takes the first set through either just Alcaraz being tight, or maybe they get to a tiebreak and Medvedev hits a couple of the high leverage points. If you can get an entry point on Alcaraz in this one, anywhere around to pick him, if he's down 0-1, or if it's in a tiebreak and it looks like he's going to lose, I'll definitely scoop some live Alcaraz because I think he's the better player. I think he's got the legs to outlast Medvedev. And I think Medvedev's tactical approach to this particular surface in this tournament has been pretty lackluster. Don't love how far he's standing back. Don't love his susceptibility to getting dropped in terms of just the absolutely superlative drop shot that Alcaraz deploys so effectively in terms of surprise. I may be overthinking it because Medvedev is a very smart player, and he's probably, obviously, he's looked at the tape. He knows what to expect. He's going to have some read. So far, at least, this looks like a pretty clear advantage Alcaraz to me. My fair price in terms of games, I think 4.5 is right. If you can get -4.5 games in the plus money range, I think that's a decent bet still. But the way I see this breaking is probably Alcaraz 3-1 or Alcaraz 3-0. And that'll set up, Wimbledon will finally start on Sunday. Yeah. We've been waiting and waiting and waiting for Wimbledon to start, and it's almost here. Now, if Medvedev wins and it never starts, we got to wait another year. But this has been, just a waiting game here for the men's tournament to get in under, into the business end of this tournament, so we can see Djokovic truly challenged. And I think that's going to happen Sunday one way or the other, but certainly if it's Alcaraz.
About 45 seconds. Anything in Vondrousova and on Jabeur? Is Jabeur a 210 favorite?
I'm completely staying out of this one because I am a hardcore Ons Jabeur fan, and I just want to kick my feet up and enjoy this. I think she's going to win. I think her fair price is -250. Market right now sitting around -220. Okay, that's fine. I think there's a small edge to Ons, but I'm really excited for her and her run in this tournament. And even if she ultimately doesn't win, it's not going to change my my ultimate feelings about these last 2 years. Wimbledon has been all about Ons, and these last two victories in particular were so meaningful and awesome. So really, congratulations to her on this run.
Drew, always good to talk to you, man. Thanks a lot. Hope you're doing well.
Yeah, best of luck, guys. Enjoy.
@whale_capper up on Twitter. We'll take our break. We'll come back. Plenty left to get to. We've left a lot of them in the cutting room floor. We got to keep on going here on A Numbers Game.
Numbers told the story they always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is A Numbers Game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Second hour of A Numbers Game presented by BetMGM. I'm Jonathan Von Tobel filling in for Gil Alexander. He's going to be back on Monday. Kelly, of course, alongside. Before we get to our expansion on the conversation around the NFC East, I was just yelling about a former NFC East quarterback 2 seconds ago. We had a lot of energy this morning. You know?
That's right.
Pounded
That's right.
a five-hour energy. I consume so much caffeine. For me, it's like a 2.5 hour energy.
Oh, we are. When you and I are paired together, there's no show that matches the caffeine intake of the two of us.
The caffeine what I like to think of is our hair is representative of our energy. Oh, always up.
Yep. Yeah, like that.
It's a good one, right?
And just our energy.
Look at that. See, I'm a quick thinker. I'm a quick thinker, huh? I one time told my dad that I wanted to do, I was like in fifth grade. I told him I wanted to be a stand-up comedian. I was like, Dad, I think I'm hilarious. And he laughed at me. He goes, that is funny.
The ultimate dad joke. You just played right into the ultimate dad joke.
Yes. My thoughts were shot down. And then, of course, I think I've told you this story before, but then there was the dream crushing. When the first time I had like existential thoughts about my existence were like in fifth grade when we took like these career aptitude tests. And it was like manual labor, farmer. Like stuff like that. And
I never took one of those. I never got one of those.
Yeah.
Like, do they still do those at some point in school? I never took one of those.
I think so. It's kind of crushing to give it to like a fourth grader. Like,
that feels very early.
And I want to say, because it sounds like farming is obviously a very hard task and it's a very important job. So I don't want to downplay that. But as a fourth grader who thought like I was kind of smart and wanted to get to like at one point I wanted to be, this is going to sound crazy, I wanted to be an archaeologist. You know what I mean? And so, like, I wanted to do, like, smart things and, like, thinking and science and all that stuff. And then they're like, nah, according to this test, thinking's not your game, dude.
So, and all the people out there that are thinking JVT just wanted to be Indiana Jones, there's, like, a slight chance he hasn't seen any Indiana Jones movies.
I have seen the one, Temple of Doom, is that where he rips his heart out? Or tries to, at least.
Yeah. Wow, you saw the first one, man. You broke your rule for that one.
But again, I always say this. When do you think I watched it?
When you were a kid.
Yeah, when my dad made me watch it or something like that. Like, of course. I'm not saying, like, I sat down and watched The Crystal Skull. That movie sucked.
Indiana
Jones, like, which one's the one where he shoots the guy with the whip?
I don't mean everyone. I don't know.
No, remember there's a scene, there's like an iconic scene.
The second one. I don't think that happened in the last.
But you know, time where he's like doing all the theatrics with the whip and they're about to fight and Harrison Ford's like, I don't have time for this. Like, by the way, very realistic. That would be me in any action movie. But yes, I've seen that one.
Okay.
Speaking of, I can't think of a segue. I was like, Rory McIlroy's whipping this course into shape. I can't.
You know, your segues have been awesome. They don't have to be awesome every time.
That's
okay?
True. Right.
With the Scottish Open update brought to you by Bananas. They're delicious no matter how you open them up. We got Ben on top right now. He is 10 under par. He just started his second round. He's through 4, 1 under on the day. Major movement in the morning. And JVT, there's nothing like waking up in the morning and seeing one of your guys you bet on have a great round and you missed every shot of it. Tyrrell Hatton went 8 under this morning. He is 9 under under par for the tournament, tied with Tom Kim and Rory McIlroy. Rory out there on the course right now, 3 under through 10 on his second round. But
yeah,
nine
just teed
under.
Off on 11 right now, I saw.
Yeah, 9 under for the tournament. And then you have, in the clubhouse at 7 under par, Patrick Harrington, Scottie Scheffler, Nicolai Højgaard at 7 under par, Brian Harman, which is maybe the biggest surprise on here, is 7 under par. He is on the course through 6, 4 under through 6 on his round today. Daniel Hillier, 6 under par. I got a bunch of guys at 6 under, including Max Homa, Ricky Fowler, Sam Burns in that group. I know Matt Brown has a bet on Max Homa, so he'll be rooting that one on. I know our friend Will Hill has a bet on Sam Burns, so he'll be rooting that one on. And over in Wimbledon, we are in the third set. Jannik Sinner up 5-4 over Novak Djokovic in that set right now, but Novak did take the first two, so he's up 2-0 right now. Third set action, if you're looking to get in live, Novak minus 900, Jannik Sinner plus 550. And just a reminder, we got Alcaraz and Medvedev coming up here. Well, it's going to be about 45 minutes after that match finishes. But Alcaraz minus 235, Medvedev plus 195 right now.
All right, I like it. Set point number two here for Sinner, I believe, so I want to update at all. That's my tennis lingo. That's what I got.
There you go.
I like the sport. I very much enjoy watching it. It's one of those things that if it's on, I will totally watch as much as I can. But the intricacies of it are something that escape me. Like, you were fascinating me. We were talking about the difference in terms of, like, playing on grass and clay and all, and hard court and everything like that. That watching Wimbledon has been always fascinating to me, the concept of playing tennis on grass.
Yeah, this is a pretty big action point right now. Yep. Sinner just blew it. All right, we're deuced now
break
with
it,
him 5-4.
Oh, man.
Djokovic serving.
Sorry, not like tennis break, that lingo. It looked like he was actually going to break his racket over his knee. that's what I wanted. I didn't want, like, I get that there's a
yeah, he
a term.
He went for the put away Djokovic forehand there and missed wide badly.
Wow.
Djokovic really playing to the crowd because
I think I would try to fight. Everything I've seen from Djokovic as, like, a player, I think afterwards I'd try to fight him. Well, like, dude, you're annoying.
We've hit the point in his career, though. Like, if you watch all these matches, we've hit the point in his career where it's like people are, like, we talk about voter fatigue.
Yeah.
There's, like, a Djokovic fatigue. So any time he plays, there's, like, more than half the crowd's rooting for the random dude to beat him, like, especially in early rounds. Like, if we get to the semis and finals, usually there's smarter tennis fans that turn around and start rooting for Djokovic. But I think he's been dealing with a lot of that at Wimbledon. So that's why you're going to see him look at the crowd very often in these matches.
Yeah. Wow, look at this. All of a sudden, am I going to get this right? Down in the game, 40-15, and all of a sudden, Djokovic advantage here.
There you go. Yeah.
Okay, cool.
You got it. Yeah.
All right. I like it. I like the eagle eye.
No, he was down 15-40. 15-40,
yes. Sorry. Yeah, you're right. Because he's on serve. Apologize. It is a good watch, though. All right, with that, we expand really quickly. We're talking about the NFC East, bringing in the Saquon Barkley news and tying into this. So I was, because, you got to get prepped. You want to look at some of these things. I mentioned the Giants because one of the win totals I had last year, Kelly, was the Giants over the win total. Mm-hmm. One of the easier schedules. I think they had the second easiest schedule by win total projections last year. Dable's an awesome coach. But now all of a sudden, this is a team that you're going to see coming. Some spots were as high as 8.5 for the Giants win total right now. You see the win total up here, 7.5. And it's right in line with where they were last year. The worry is twofold. It's the thing with Barkley in that he's not going to be available once the season begins, Saquon Barkley. And the other is, there's a universe in which Daniel Jones, for lack of a better term, turns into a little bit of a pumpkin. When you're talking about the way that he played last season, on the surface, he was great. Or we'll call it fine, actually, as a passer. Overall offensive grade, 75.8. As a passer, though, a PFF grade of 70, which is not great. And a turnover-worthy play rate of 3%. So essentially, on 3% of his pass attempts, he was committing a turnover-worthy play. Overall, the turnovers and the interceptions were down, but those are things that tend to regress to the mean when you're talking about turnover-worthy play rate and getting a little lucky on those. The best example of that, by the way, is it's Patrick Mahomes. Remember, not last year, but the year before, where Mahomes was going through that stretch of committing, like, a bunch of turnovers, and everybody was like, what's going on? Actually, his turnover-worthy play rate was identical to what it was at the beginning of his career. It's just that the turnover-worthy plays were actually turning into turnovers.
Right.
And you were getting a little lucky. Daniel Jones was the inverse of that, where the turnover-worthy plays were not turning into turnovers at such a high rate. So there's a universe in which he comes out, commits the same rate of turnover-worthy plays, except those turnover-worthy plays become turnovers. And all of a sudden, you're looking around and going, okay, well, he is a average to below average passer by PFF standards. He finished 20th in PFF passing grade. Again, these are only one standard, so you just keep in mind, but it gives us an idea of what's going on. And if that happens, and if Saquon Barkley is not going to be available at the beginning of the year, and you're a team that the market has rated as one of the above average teams because of how good Dable is, I think that all leads to playing against New York in quite a few ways, whether it's going to be under on the win total, whether it's going to be on a week-to-week basis, because you don't think that a guy like Dable, as good as he is going to be able to match the market expectations for his team. But of all of these teams in the NFC East, the one I kind of felt most confident on in terms of an angle to attack them, it was the New York Giants after what happened with them last year. And look, their schedule this year is a little bit more challenging, especially that first week, or that first column through week six. And you could go all the way through the first few, but when you're talking about, at best, coin flip spot against the Cowboys, yes, you get to go to the Cardinals. But then after that, at the 49ers, Seahawks coin flip spot, at the Dolphins, at the Bills consecutive weeks. This is a schedule that is going to present a ton of challenges for the New York Giants on top of market expectations of being an above average / playoff team this year.
I would say if there's anybody who is high on the Giants, like let's say they get Barkley signs a franchise tag and whatever, you've been high on them anyways. This is where I always go through all the schedules and circle spots like this of the chunk of the season, right? So like you're talking about, I mean, it is well within reality that they start off 2-4 or something right. like that. And if you're looking at that, if you were going to play over a win total, wait till that first stretch of the season and just get in live. Like this is that, like you said, that is a really rough schedule to start the season off.
I mean, I would argue all the way through the bye week, like it is just when you have a schedule that's littered with at the best coin flip spots, almost everywhere, that you're asking for those coin flips to go your way at an above average rate. Mm-hmm. And that's just not something generally that will happen from a lot. Now it can over the course of a short sample size.
Like the Vikings last year.
Yeah, exactly. And so when you're looking at it from the Giants standpoint, and I would even argue when you're talking about everything all the way through the Commanders, because obviously it's a divisional opponent, the Jets at the Raiders, at the Cowboys, at the Commanders again, home versus the Patriots, a team that at the very least they're going to be power rated equally to, it's a lot to ask for the New York Giants to come through this, I think. And have a winning record and get to the postseason one more time. As far as the other teams are concerned, I'll be quite honest with you. I'm not entirely sure what I would do with a bunch of these teams. I think a team at the bottom, I know a lot of people are very high on the, as high as you can be on a team like Washington and whatever Sam Howell is going to be, but we're building that off of one game, and that one game still didn't grade out particularly well. But out of all of these three teams, felt as confident in taking an angle on the Giants that I am at least looking at going into next season. All right, let's take our break. When we come back, we have plenty to get to, more win totals to get through in terms of the NBA, as those came out this week over at DraftKings. We can take a look at those. And there's a division out there, the Southwest. There's a team that I have a guilty pleasure about that we'll discuss.
Numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Got a lot of stuff up on the website. One of the best tools we have, the picks page. You can easily sort through picks made by VSiN show hosts and guests. Follow your favorite hosts and whatnot, and check out the top VSiN experts leaderboard. See who's got the hot hand. Check it out. Introductory offer, $19. VSiN.com/subscribe. Quick housekeeping. So I did look it up. So it was Hakeem Olajuwon. McDonald's commercial, he was required to dunk chicken nuggets into his mouth. That was the concept of it. Took 100 takes, 5 hours. So he ate 100 nuggets in 5 hours. Now, Hakeem Olajuwon
took 100 takes?
Yeah.
How did this take 100 takes?
Who knows? But a finely tuned athlete whose metabolism is probably running a little bit quicker than ours. Maybe 100 nuggets, no problem. We do have a challenge from downstairs. Isaiah Wrinkle says that he could do this.
Oh, he's accepted. I knew he was going to be chomping at the bit for it.
And what are the parameters?
What I tossed out to him was 100 nuggets because I knew he was going to be cocky about it too. 100 nuggets in 3 hours. I knew he would scoff at that.
Okay.
So I offered 100 nuggets in 100 minutes for $100 and only $100. And he immediately accepted.
Wow.
Snap. That's snap hard. Accepted.
That's hard.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because you're going to start fast and then you're going to start to slow down.
Yep.
All right, we're doing this.
Actually, we might do that. Isaiah, prepare for that next Friday.
Yep.
Yes, I think next Friday would be a good day for that.
Okay. And we'll have – do we have a camera downstairs? Can we just have like a nugget feed?
Oh, we can figure out something.
Yeah, we just have like a nugget feed. Yeah, you know what I mean? Like we just panned Isaiah eating chicken nuggets. Every once in a while, check in on the counter.
Isaiah Wrinkle, for those who don't know, a legendary director and graphics operator here. And also, I don't even know what his full title is. Director, manager of the Gojo show that you see on DK Network.
So. Yes. Hey, ask Golic. Isaiah, ask Golic about this challenge. See what he says.
Yeah, yeah.
See what he says and if he wants to get in on this.
He's probably not going to want him
to do it. Some family bonding between us and the DK Network and the guys over there like we had at the Summer League this time
That's right.
All right. So with that, let's talk a little bit about some more win totals in the NBA. I mentioned a couple of times a guilty pleasure that I'm going to have next year. So, Kelly, I've posed this to you, and I want to ask in all seriousness if I'm crazy or not. I low-key kind of like what the Dallas Mavericks have done so far in this offseason. If you look at the additions and what they were able to do, again, it's one of those things where it's kind of like the Phoenix Suns or the Los Angeles Lakers in that given the hand you were dealt, you did the most you could with it. And I think that's exactly what the Mavericks did here. Obviously, it starts with re-signing Kyrie Irving, and I get that that is the biggest hurdle. Is Kyrie Irving going to be available? All that. Yes, I understand. But outside of Luka Doncic, Kyrie Irving being great, you still have Tim Hardaway Jr. on this roster. I don't think it's similar to what we talked about these other pieces. Like I don't think in the grand scheme of things, when it comes to like NBA betting and whatnot, that the addition of Grant Williams impacts a lot of people the way it should. Grant Williams is a really, really good piece. He is exactly what they've been looking for in terms of a 3-and-D wing option. He can hit 3-point shots. He can defend. Tim Bontemps on, I think it was Brian Windhorst's podcast, had this ridiculous stat where it was like, there's been like 5 players over the last handful of years, or maybe it was just last year, that has guarded every position at least 100 possessions. Mm. Grant Williams was one of them.
Yeah.
He can guard centers, he can guard point guards, and he can guard everything in between. So he's a very vital defensive piece. He can also space the floor. They've got 2 really good offensive players in Luka Doncic and Kyrie Irving. They have on their bench Seth Curry. They have another good defensive piece off the bench in Josh Green. The center depth is a little bit better. Dwight Powell, Rashawn Holmes. If Derek Lively, the rookie, pans out, that's going to be something that really looks, I think, pretty good in terms of their depth. Overall, if Jaden Hardy, if the development of Hardy that we've seen out here in Summer League is real, that's another young piece that they're going to have. And, of course, taking some shots on some guys. Like, what if all of a sudden the Dante Exum that's been tearing up basketball overseas is healthy and ready to go? Like, I kind of really like what what the Dallas Mavericks have done. And if you throw into the equation, Kelly, the Grizzlies and their issues with Ja Morant, what's going to happen there, not having him for 25 games, the Pelicans with a long history of not having Zion Williamson available for, you know, a adequate amount of games, we'll call them, in a regular season. Am I crazy to think that looking at the Mavericks and going, you know, like over the win total to win the division, like I don't think it's that crazy for the Dallas Mavericks, even with the way the last season ended.
Yeah, I think I'd be much more interested in the win total than, I don't know. I'm not as excited as you are about this team. I think the Grant Williams addition is great. I think there's a little bit of I'm trying not to let myself get overexcited about that addition. You know what I mean? Because, look, I think at the end of the day, we still got to think the Boston Celtics let him walk away and just walk away. And whenever a team does that, it always gives me some kind of pause a little bit, because I love him too. I love Grant Williams too, and I don't really understand why Boston really did that. Yes, it is to free up some space to bring in Porzingis, but still, they could have figured out a way to bring him back. I think there's a little bit of pause for me in that, and what I think you're saying is it's all true and all there, JVT, but I think the ceiling for this team is very high, but I think the floor could be exactly what we saw last year or somewhere in that range. So I don't know if something, you know, something injury wise happens, or, you know, we get more Kyrie holding out or whatever like that for some games, I think things could spiral quickly. I think this team, I love Luka Doncic, and I love a lot of players. And whatever you think about Kyrie Irving, they still have 2 of the top 20 players in the NBA. This is still one of the best duos in the NBA that you're going to see in Dallas this year. The concern for me with this team is, have we still figured out exactly how to put pieces around Luka Doncic? And I think that this is one of the best versions we've seen of it yet, JVT. But I've finally hit the point with the Mavs of I'm not gonna get excited about this team until I kind of see it. Mm-hmm. So for me, I'm not saying that it would be a non-bet, and this is probably a division I'm not betting at all. I got to wait and see that team in action this year. I got to wait and see the Pelicans in action this year. How's Zion going to come back? What kind of shape is he going to be in? Is he going to miss more time? You know how much I love Zion. That's why, honestly, I'd probably stay away from this division completely. And then, obviously, the Grizzlies got everything going on with Ja Morant. So it really is – it's really an interesting division that maybe – maybe I think if you were betting it before the season, the only way to go is the way you're talking about. Otherwise, if you're someone like me, it's wait till you get in season and reevaluate things. But the Mavericks, you might want to actually bet before the season.
My last question about this division, I feel like sometimes we let, and I think this happens in setting the odds sometimes as well, like narrative carries over into projecting out for some of these teams. So I bring that up because a lot of people during free agency were asking the question, what are the Rockets doing? And there's a lot of people were shocked that a guy like Dylan Brooks got money. Mm-hmm. Dylan Brooks has value, right? Dylan Brooks is a good defender. Dylan Brooks is a valuable NBA player, okay? Yes, the last season ended wrong. We all remember what we saw last. There were teams that covered them. And maybe the Rockets overpaid. That's fine. Still a good player. Fred VanVleet, say what you want. He's a good NBA point guard. Did the Rockets overpay? Sure. But it's actually only $30 million. It's actually only 3 years. And by the way, team option for the third year. So it's actually not terrible in terms of what you're giving them, because after 2 years, you could say, sayonara, we're done. Are the Rockets really, like, I look at this and I see them on par with the Spurs, but you have a core of Fred VanVleet, Jalen Green, Dylan Brooks, Alperen Şengün. You have young pieces that I think could contribute. We talked about Cam Whitmore potentially being a rookie of the year. Am I wrong in thinking the Rockets are really going to be this bad? Like, they're really going to fight for only 30 wins this season?
So I think this one's interesting, because I don't know that I'm running to bet that win total over JVT, but the way I might approach this is the wait till more markets open up, and if we get one of those like matchups, right? Like if you gave me Spurs Rockets matchup,
right?
Oh man, I'd be hammering the Rockets.
Yeah, a one win difference between the Spurs and the Rockets, that seems light to me.
Yes, I agree. I agree with that.
And I just think when you're looking at what Houston can potentially be, like there's a lot of pretty good pieces here. And here's, we're not even attributing one of the bigger changes. He might be a creep. Ime Udoka is a good coach.
Mm-hmm.
And he's got now veterans on this roster that are at least going to help. You might not understand big picture what they're doing because they have a young core, but they got better. And the young pieces are still there and pretty good. And you can make the argument that there is some depth to this team that when and if a Fred VanVleet gets injured or Dylan Brooks or these, like, you're replacing them with high-end young pieces. They're going to take on some starting roles. I feel like we've gone a little too far with this. Like, I understand if you don't understand what the Rockets did, but there's still, like, this is still a collection of pieces that I think kind of fits and is going to be a little bit better than the market would think.
Yeah, I think that the difference, I think there's two things of the, like, okay, if you want to talk about all the money they paid for Fred VanVleet and Dylan Brooks, yeah, it's a lot of money. Is it too much money? Yeah, it's probably too much money. But those words depend on team to team,
right?
The Rockets had a ton of open cap space. So, like, the money really doesn't matter for them, what they're paying Fred VanVleet and Dylan Brooks. What you pointed out, the years on those contracts honestly matter more. But I do kind of agree with Drew. He said this when he was just on with us earlier. It's a little odd to me that you're in a full rebuild mode. And like a man and Cam Whitmore got to be coming off the bench and backing up guys, because you just went out and signed guys at the same position.
Like, they should be starting.
They should be starting.
Sure.
Like, get those guys reps ASAP.
But not liking the long-term plan is not the same as understanding what the team's going to be this year.
Correct.
You see what I'm saying?
Like,
those are two different things as I hold up my little fists. All right, last 10. Let's get out of here on a high note on a numbers game.